There is a fortunate coincidence. I just went to the United Synagogue and Rabbinical Assembly Convention called 2020 Judaism. They wrote it 20/20, like eyesight. How adorable. I'll first start with the bad. There's a lot of good, but the bad is there are two things that are bad. The first is that panels are, according to one, becoming passé. I thought we had just started using panels. I enjoy them quite a bit. We have another one coming up Wednesday on the status, learning about, and the future of interfaith burial in the new Jewish cemetery. I'm looking forward to that panel. I think we have some legs left in our panels. Also, I made a very big boo-boo in the class I taught, which you can laugh at me. It's good to be self-effacing. I was teaching a class on embracing imperfection, our own and God's. And, well, I guess so it worked out great that I embraced imperfection in the class. And we were studying a beautiful, probably my favorite midrash, which is the story of God's reaction to the destruction of the temple. It's in one of the early parts of Lamentations Rabbah, the collection of Midrashim written about Lamentations. So I think it's 4th or 8th century in that ballpark. Whereas Lamentations is written about the destruction of the first temple, the Midrashim are probably an echo of the destruction of the second temple. So it describes all the ways in which God tries to learn compassion and try to understand the suffering of humankind, much as I pointed out, incarnation in Christianity fills that role, that the reason God becomes incarnate in the body of Jesus is so that God can understand human suffering. And we do have traditions like that of God learning about human suffering. In the Midrash, it's through Jeremiah, through the patriarchs, through Moses, but the clincher for God is actually from this week's parasha, when Rachel dies. And Rachel is buried on the road to Bethlehem, which is now near Ephrath, potentially. And the question is asked in Midrash elsewhere as well, why is Rachel buried not in the tomb that is used, the cave and tomb and mausoleum that's used for other ancestors? It's so that as the exiles depart for Babylon, she can cry out for them and beseech God for mercy. And in the Midrash I taught last Shabbat at the conference, that is the breaking point where God understands mercy and compassion and grief. And the clincher is the line from Jeremiah, a voice is heard from Ramah, Rachel weeping for her children. And I said to the group, this is the part where I made a fool of myself, I said to the group, I think that's in a haftarah. And one guy raises his hand, he says, yes, it's the second day of Rosh Hashanah. I thought, oh, that's pretty embarrassing that I didn't recognize the haftarah from the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Another person said, well, to be fair, it's only once a year. I was quite embarrassed. But so that's the sort of sad and silly or funny of the conference. That there were a lot of really promising and inviting signs for the future of our congregation that I want to share with you. A lot of the things we are doing in the past years are, I don't know, I want to say part of a trend because I think that minimizes the innovation and creativity we have, but we are on the crest of a wave in several places, and I think that's very exciting that the things we are trying are part of broader events in the Jewish community, certainly in the conservative Jewish world. I'll share with you many of them. But first, I want to share with you a beautiful teaching on this week's parasha. Tara Moore, in her book Playing Big, which I learned as part of a class on integrating women and, in some cases, other sexual and gender minorities into synagogue leadership, but it was mostly about women and power. So in her book, Playing Big, she talks about the words pachad and yirah, which are both emotions that Jacob expresses, I think both of them in this parasha. And it's not so clear why she would choose one word over the other. It's not so dissimilar to the question I raised months ago about why the Dalai Lama chooses happiness over joy to mean one thing. It's just a choice. So pachad, she describes, Ms. Moore describes as sort of the imposter syndrome, the fear we fear of being found out, the anxiety that someone's going to find out we don't actually know that much about material science, or that I don't recognize this text in Haftarah or in Holocaust studies. What? Yeah. But what's very interesting I found in this description is that yirah, so pachad means fear and yirah means awe, let's say for a ballpark. It's not exactly right, but Yirah feels the same, but Ms. Moore defines Yirah as the sense of being placed in a role or a position or a context that is larger than what one is used to. It being on the precipice of newer leadership, newer views, sort of the dizzying heights of, to go back to a High Holiday sermon, of attaining one's mountain, of climbing the mountain. And the struggle in a life is that those things feel the same. Right? Pachad, the fear of being found out, feels very similar to, oops, I'm in a position I've never been in before. This is exciting and scary. Not necessarily that you'll be found out, but that you have more power and potential than you had. So that, I think, is actually a lot to do with where we are as a community. We are, I observed over the conference, a precipice is the wrong metaphor, but at a height, at a ramah, to use that word again. And we may shrink from that potentiality, just as Jacob does in the beautiful verse, chapter 32, 11. Katonti michol chasidim mikol emet asher asiti et avdecha, ki vimkali avarti et yarden hazeh v'ata hayiti lishnei machanot. I am too small for all of the graces and truths that you have done for your servant, Jacob speaking to God. Which I think is kind of on the cusp between pachad and yirah, that sense of the fear of being found out, but the sense of smallness that one experiences looking at an ocean. That's a very powerful sense of small, a liberating sense of smallness. And Radak David Kimchi, though I like to pronounce it Kimchi, because that's usually the way it's written, puts in the mouth of Jacob, I'm not asking you, God, to help me according to my merits. I'm perfectly aware that my merits aren't enough. Which is to say, I'm putting myself in your hands, as our Christian brethren might say. I'm putting yourself in my hands, and you do the work with me. That's, I think, a piece of where we are. And it's natural to be afraid and awed by that responsibility. In every generation, Judaism has to be renewed. And we stand, in some ways, at the crossroads of generations. And it's as they say, Judaism is the eternally dying religion. But somehow, in every generation, we reinvigorate it and we recreate it. And that's a lot of what I saw at the conference, is the incipient, the early parts of what will renew us. And I'll share those with you in just a second. But it's normal to be afraid. Because Genesis Rabbah, another midrash on this parasha, says, even though two people, we know of two people who received God's assurances, they were afraid. And one of those is Jacob, the other will be Moses. So I want to tell you specifically what I saw that was really quite lovely, and it raised the value and the stakes that the synagogue sent me to this conference. I thought it was entirely worthwhile. So on Friday night, they had a Shabbat called Sovev with two percussionists. Rich Adlin was there with me, so he can relay some of this to you. And it was a two-hour service, which I don't think is typical for this service in LA. It's probably much more like an hour, but they wanted to show us how it functions. We all sat in concentric circles, and in the middle, like the Hootenanny, somewhat like at the alternative service, were the musicians. In this case, it was just drummers, but singers with microphones. And we sung more major key melodies, and what I described to Jeff as sort of a raga singing, where you take a small verse, a small piece of scripture, typically, and sing it again and again and again, and build in harmonies and build in richness and sort of activate the melodies as this sort of harmonic vibration that you can feel in your chest. And combined with the percussion and potentially with other instruments, it's a very powerful way to sing. And I see some of these melodies. I'm very excited about melodies like that. Some of them were a little Disney-fied, but most of them were quite rich melodies that really lent to powerful singing in community. And what was else pointed out elsewhere in another session on music was the capacity of bringing people closer together to enhance the power of the music. So I think it's the last Shabbat of January. We're going to do a service in that foyer where we can see the stained glass, but we'll all be sort of in a more compressed, smaller space with unfixed seating. That's an innovation the RNRS is bringing. So I really think this fits in with larger trends. I saw a Shabbat morning service that was marked as reimagining Shabbat and was disappointed that it was less creative than things we do here. It was really just a couple of new melodies and a piano. Couldn't understand why they thought that was so imaginative. But I am excited to observe two things that I saw, which is that meditation is happening in different contexts, and that's something we're starting to integrate in our work, both something I lead and something Shush and others have led, that games, and using sort of the ludic perspective, as I said with at Sheldon Cohen's memorial, that's just a fancy word for playfulness as a way to teach, is becoming integrated. I had a colleague who said we should get together and create a Jewish games program. There was one other. And sort of Musar mindfulness groups are also growing. So I had a colleague who had, you know, I'm in the middle of putting together a script for the very first session we had of mindfulness practice yesterday, and we exchanged scripts, and it felt like, wow, we're all working on some of the same projects, both at congregational levels and at rabbinic levels. That was the nice thing about it being an integrated rabbinical assembly, United Synagogue project, was that you could see sort of the way rabbis and their congregations are creating and innovating together. And a lot of those things, not panels, as I pointed out, but a lot of those things are things we're working on. And that was really a source of great comfort, that we're on the right track, I guess is what the message of the congregation, the message of the conference was. We still, what is it they said, of, I don't think King said it, but it was said of King, we ain't where we want to be, we ain't where we should be, but thank God we're not where we used to be. It's not exactly appropriate to us, because I have no regrets about where we've been. But we're on the right track. And so as I said, it's natural to have ambivalence or anxiety. Those are natural emotions in periods of transition and change. And as I said, you know, at the crossroads of multiple generations, the greatest generation, the baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Y, where we have all those components among us. And the struggle to integrate different generations is another thing that colleagues were working on. I have a sort of a colleague who has some expertise in how to integrate children in the synagogue service. She told me all these tips, and she's going to send me an email with like a checklist. So I'm very excited. But as I said, you know, we are always enjoined to gather together in the struggle. And that's sort of the point of Yisrael, Jacob's second name, the one who struggles with God, the one who struggles with the holiness and with spirit, and with the divine, and with the almighty, and the power and potential of religion and spirituality. And the Esh Kodesh, whom some of you know, is one of my favorite teachers. He was the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto, said of this parasha, that enduring is no acme of excellence. That filling seats is not the point. The point is that everything should be matched with a great ascent, that we should ascend. And so when we think about our preparations moving forward of how to continually, and I really think it will be a continual process, we can never rest. We take a deep breath, but then we go on. Jacob prepared himself in this case for the arrival of Esav in three ways. He sent the gift, he made a prayer, and he made himself ready for combat. We're going to need to do all those things. We're going to need to be gracious and generous with our time, talent, and treasure. We're going to pray for God's direction, for the future of this congregation, for the future of this Jewish people, for the future of broader community. And not ready for war, but understanding that conflict is an inherent part of change. And we can be polite and kind to each other, but that doesn't mean we won't have diverse opinions and need to butt heads. Sometimes butting heads, as the Talmud points out, is the best way to arrive at truth. So that's our project, and I'm just so grateful to go to that conference to see the ways in which we're already beginning on the right track. We have miles to go before we sleep, and the project really never ends, but I'm very excited about our future together and the potential of all the little germs and seeds that we are growing.